Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, queer and homeless. San Francisco's latest survey of its homeless residents, conducted in June, found that almost 30% of the city's homeless were gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, while only about 15% of the city's overall population is LGBT. Many of them reported being hassled, homophobic or transphobic discrimination in shelters, and many have been and are being evicted from their homes or losing their homes for other reasons as San Francisco's rents continue to skyrocket. In response, this coming Monday, October 7th, the city holds its first ever LGBTQ Connect, a targeted version of Project Homeless Connect, the bi-monthly events to help low-income people find housing and a wide range of services in a one-stop shop setup. Over the next half hour, we'll be talking about Monday's event and the issues that prompted it. My guests tonight are from Project Homeless Connect and from the AIDS Housing Alliance San Francisco. First, let me introduce Emily Cohen. She's director of programs at Project Homeless Connect and in particular runs Everyday Connect, helping people who come by Project Homeless Connect's offices between the big bi-monthly events. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you very much for having me.
And here in KLW studios with us also is the director of the AIDS Housing Alliance of San Francisco, Brian Basinger. I forgot to ask you, is it Basinger?
It's Basinger.
Basinger, thank you. Let's see, blow it. He's credited with coming up with the idea for LGBTQ Connect. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
So first, briefly, and we'll get into more detail later, what are the range of services and help people can expect to get or learn about at LGBTQ Connect happening next Monday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at San Francisco's LGBT Center? Emily?
We have about 80 organizations registered to come and deliver services on-site at the center on Monday. They range from housing, shelter, medical, dental, vision services, haircuts, legal, you name it, it's going to be there. We're really excited to expand what we offer normally at our Project Homeless Connect events to include specific events for the LGBTQ community, and we hope that we'll create a really open and warm environment for everyone to come
to. So some of the specific ones you'd have there that you might not have, for example, at your more general ones.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, you can also speak to this. I know, you know, AIDS Housing Alliance is going to be there. Lyric is going to be there. Some more LGBT-focused organizations that aren't at all of our regular homeless-focused events.
Transgender Law Center is going to be coming there and doing a legal clinic specifically around transgender folks who might have complaints of discrimination in city-provided services or within the shelter system. The Human Rights Commission is going to be there to help folks, and then also some of the targeted organizations like Lyric, which is Lavender Youth Recreation and Information Center. I'll be bringing in our services for affordable housing applications and also emergency hotel vouchers, so people who qualify would be able to walk out of there with a place, who are on the streets will be able to walk out of there with, you know, a short-term stay in a hotel, and a variety of other services. We're bringing in pro bono legal immigration.
Wow.
Because I'm not sure that people are aware of how big of an issue immigration is in the LGBT community, and especially for me, the crossover with LGBT and HIV. And we have, you know, folks from all over the world who are coming from really, you know, horrific environments where they're really at risk of being murdered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of their gender status, their sexual orientation, their HIV, and they just come here, and especially now. There's a lot of tools that people can avail themselves to get the documents that they need in order to qualify for housing, so they don't have to be sleeping in the parks and the other things, which is kind of the situation people are in right now.
So what prompted this event on Monday? Tell us about the city's homeless survey or the homeless count in June that found that 29% of San Franciscans without homes are LGBT or identify as something other than straight, apparently.
I think there was a crossover of a lot of information that came available at the same time. One of them, the Board of Supervisors, released this what's called a social equity report, and they have these beautiful maps. And I was looking at them, and I noticed that the Castro and Bernal have the highest rates of no-fault evictions in the city, which is those are when people lose their homes through no fault of their own. It's usually an owner move-in or an Ellis Act eviction or something like that. And the numbers were really staggering about the disproportionate rates of evictions going on in those in those two neighborhoods. And, you know, right around that same time, Jonathan Klein, who was one of the pillars of the LGBT community in San Francisco, he helped create the Castro. You know, he had Now Voyager Travel, and it really, you know, was one of the driving forces behind this whole international gay tourism, which has so many repercussions for spreading the sense of freedom that we created in San Francisco and really distributing it to the world. So the importance of this man is really hard for people who are not connected to the community to understand. And he was evicted from his long-term home, became homeless, and then his co-founder, he was sleeping...
Of the business, Now Voyager Travel. Right.
Yeah, of Now Voyager Travel. He was... he got evicted from his home. That is also where the business is at the same time. And Jonathan gave up, and after surviving AIDS and for so many decades, wound up jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge out of just hopelessness. We also got the Homeless Point in Time Count and Survey, which showed the 29% of homelessness. And then we also have this... the release of a survey of LGBT older adults in San Francisco, and found 24% of them had an immediate need of housing assistance. 46 were afraid of losing their homes. And
that's primarily because of high rents and fear of eviction, or what kind
the
of
inability?
Reasons?
Yeah, it's the need of rental assistance is that they don't have enough money to keep their homes, and they don't have access to rental assistance. In San Francisco, because of the way that we've previously designed our rental assistance programs. What really disturbed me is 64% of housing service recipients said that they had been discriminated against or were afraid of being discriminated against by their housing provider based on their LGBT status, and 15% of LGBT older adults in San Francisco reported that they had seriously contemplated suicide within the previous 12 months. And so those of us in the public health world, when we talk about serious contemplation of suicide, that's the highest marker of risk of suicide. And then when we talk about in the past 12 months, that's also really focusing on people who are the most at risk. It's not ever in your life. And so I think what we're starting to see is there's this really disturbing trend here in San Francisco that is heartbreaking. So we have disparities of homelessness. We're 15% of the population, but 30% of the homeless. We have structural barriers to accessing the services that can keep us housed because the city's policies exclude the majority of LGBT people from being able to get access to homeless prevention or rapid rehousing services. The services that people do get access to, they feel discriminated because of it.
So hold on a second. So a second ago, you said, can you elaborate on that a little bit, Emily? Like, what do you see when people come into Everyday Connect where you're working? What kind of problems are they having at shelters where they're not being, as you were saying, Brian, treated, feel like they're being discriminated against in some way?
Yeah, we're hearing this pretty often. Unfortunately, folks come into our office asking for advocacy. Folks who identify as LGB, and then also folks who are transgendered. I think folks who are transgendered have a specifically challenging time accessing the shelter system. There are women's shelters that are friendly and allow transitioning folks to come in, but there's a lot of discrimination among the staff and among the other residents of the shelters, and people are scared for their safety. They often come to us asking, where can I go that's not a shelter? Mm-hmm. Where can I go that's not a bus or the park? And, you know, we really have a hard time, but we work with them, we brainstorm, we send a lot of folks to Brian, but really looking for an alternative because people are scared.
Mm-hmm. And so let me get back to this number for a minute. This 29%. Is that a number that you think is, this is the first time a question about sexual orientation has been asked about in this homeless survey. But do you think that that's consistent with what it's been over time, or is there a significant change that you have reason to think that it's worse now than it might have been 5 or 10 years ago, or better? Maybe was it worse earlier?
Well, we're in a really particular time where the city is on fire as far as displacement goes. And, you know, we started the AIDS Housing Alliance during the last massive displacement. And I would say that this is worse now. Also, the rent escalation has been so outrageous that people are unable to get rehoused. So I think that it's been an issue all along. It's particularly acute right now. And I think what's happening now is that everybody is feeling it. Everybody is afraid because everybody looks around and says, you know, not if I lose my place, but when I lose my place, that's going to be me.
Right.
And I think that that's what shifted, is people understand that it's not those other people over there now. It's us. And that's what I've been trying to get people to understand, is it's not the caricature of what a homeless person is. It is our friends, our neighbors, you know, our shopkeepers. It's the fabric of our community that's being torn apart.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that every day at Everyday Connect. You know, people who have come in who this is their first time ever experiencing homelessness. They're very afraid. They're very unsure of what to do. They all say, I never thought this would happen to me. I'm not one of those people. And I think that, you know, there's really... homelessness is something that affects the entire community, and none of us are immune from the impacts of homelessness or from the potential of being homeless down the road. It's pervasive in our community, and it's something that our participants are all really, really struggling with, but especially the LGBT community because of the fear.
Mm-hmm. I must say, even my rent-controlled place, I'm a little worried lately.
Yep.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Emily Cohen, Director of Programs at Project Homeless Connect, and AIDS Housing Alliance Director Brian Basinger. We're talking about the reasons behind the high percentage of LGBT people without stable housing in San Francisco and the city's first Project Homeless Connect geared specifically toward lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, and transgender people. It's called LGBTQ Connect. It's happening next Monday, October 7th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the SF LGBT Community Center on Market Street at Octavia. Information about it online at projecthomelessconnect.com. So LGBTs are roughly 15% of SF's overall population, yet 29% of it are homeless. I'm not a statistician, but does it follow then that gay men, lesbians, trans folks as a group are about twice as likely to be homeless as straight people in San Francisco? Am I doing the math right? I mean, I thought I saw some figure in one of the articles that was like maybe 2% of LGBT people are homeless as opposed to 1% of the overall San Francisco population. That doesn't sound like a big number, 2%, but on the same time, it's a lot of people.
We talk about disproportionate impacts. And then also disparities and disproportionate impacts. So roughly, and I'll be rough here, 0.54% of families in San Francisco experience homelessness. 0.84% of the general population experiences homelessness, but 2.3% of the LGBT community is experiencing homelessness. And so that's a pretty profound disparity in the burden of homelessness on the LGBT community. And then also, you know, wearing my HIV hat, there's also this disproportionate impacts. And so when you're talking about, you know, a 60-year-old gay man with AIDS who's living on $1,000 a month, who does not have access to employment, who does not have access to any kind of rental assistance whatsoever to remain housed, then the ability to get rehoused is substantially impacted. And then also the effects on their health when people don't have a kitchen and a place to put their medications and their whole house of cards that we've put together to keep our health in place kind of gets ripped out from under people. And is damaging in a lot of ways.
when we spoke on the phone, I guess it was yesterday, you mentioned a recent Housing and Urban Development Department, a federal HUD report that said that there was, oh boy, I've got the wording here somewhere, that found SF policies were an impediment to fair housing in regards to folks with AIDS and HIV.
Yeah, that's one of the contributing factors and one of the drivers of homelessness in the LGBTQ community. HUD requires jurisdictions every 5 years to do what's called an analysis to impediments to fair housing, right? And so what they look at is they really look at access to housing through this lens that focuses on, especially on the most vulnerable people and federally protected groups like seniors and disabled folks. And what this analysis said is that senior and disabled San Franciscans are excluded by policy from the majority of tenant-based rental assistance that could keep them in their homes. And so the way that we deliver homeless prevention funding in this city and also funding to get people rehoused, the overwhelming majority of it excludes by statute senior and disabled San Franciscans.
Can you give an example of that? Like, what statute would there be that would, you know, exclude these groups from assistance? Or,
well, what the report said is that 85% of all of the homeless prevention funding and rapid rehousing funding was restricted to households with children present.
Okay.
Because of the great work of a lot of my friends in those agencies who are doing incredible work, and they're very successful. But typically, senior and disabled folks, and then LGBT community who's at risk, and, you know, gay men with AIDS who are being displaced from their homes in the Castro, overwhelmingly do not have children in the home. And for those LGBT households that do have children in the home, because they're overwhelmingly intentional families, those people, you know, 99.9% have access to resources that do not put them at risk for homelessness.
They tend to be wealthier if they choose
wealthy,
to have children.
Yes.
Right.
And so when we have these, the group that is the most impacted by evictions, who are also the group who's most impacted by homelessness, are also overwhelmingly excluded from access to the rental assistance that could keep them from becoming homeless or get them rehoused.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about how the definition or perception of homelessness has changed? You touched on it before with folks realizing that, oh, this could be me. It's not them anymore. But there's still this, I think so many of my people I know have, you know, you walk down the street and there's so many homeless people and you kind of feel like, what can I do? You feel powerless. You feel like you can't. And there's just, you're like, kind of, you're being asked for money all the time. And how can I make a difference? Or how? And people just want to assume, okay, well, you know, they're mentally ill. They're going to spend the money on drugs. You know, why should I help? So people get indifferent.
Yeah, we definitely see indifference in the community. But more than that, we actually at Project Homeless Connect see an opportunity. There's so many ways that the community can get involved in being a part of the solution and a part of delivering services. And volunteering with Project Homeless Connect is one very tangible way. We're always looking for volunteers for our main events. There's also giving to an organization that, you know, meets your what you're looking for, look where you want to put your money. If you don't feel comfortable giving directly to someone on the street, I encourage people to give to an organization that they support, whether it's the AIDS Housing Alliance or Project Homeless Connect or one of the many other partners that we work with that deliver excellent, high-quality services to people every day. I would encourage people to do that because it really does make a difference. I would also encourage people to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We tweet a need of the day. That's a personal need that one of our participants has come in and asked for. And it can range from, you know, shoes to $8 to get their ID to, we had a young woman recently come in wanting makeup for her new retail job. She was very excited about her new employment and wanted to look great. And people really do respond to that need. So the more followers we have, the more likely we are to get someone to respond to each of those needs and donate either financially or in kind to support that. One other way, a new interesting project that we're working on for people to engage is called Hand Up. And I would encourage folks to go check it out online. It is a crowdfunding site where participants, folks who are experiencing homelessness, can enroll and they get a card with their specific like tagline, and they can hand it out instead of panhandling, or hand it out to friends and family. And people can either text to donate or to go online and donate directly to them. And then they redeem points through Project Homeless Connect for productive items, shoes, clothing, housing. I mean, you name it, transportation. We spent the money on, you know, helping people get their birth certificates and IDs.
Let me make sure I got this right. So you're saying like the homeless people are handing out cards and they give to people, and they've got sort of some unique identifier on there, and they get some kind of points that they can use for stuff on the virtue of handing out the information and having people respond to that.
Exactly. So if you're not sure, if, you know, you see the same gentleman on the street every day, you want to help, but you're not really sure how, you don't really know if you should give money, you can try, you, and he, if he's a member, he, you can text to donate to him, and he goes into a pool of points for him to use at Project Homeless Connect, at, through Everyday Connect, not at the events.
Okay. So tell us what Everyday Connect is now.
Everyday Connect is a new project under Project Homeless Connect, and we are the everyday version, we try to be anyway, of Project Homeless Connect. And the idea is that people can access us 365 days a year via hotline or by coming into the office, and you can be connected to services that exist in the community. We're not there to duplicate what already exists. We help people find what they're looking for in the community. And then where that's, where there are gaps, we try to develop programming. So right now we have a denture program, a prescription glasses program, and a podiatry program, because those are the needs that our participants have identified as things they are, have really, really struggled to find. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to build that out. You know, Project Homeless Connects tries to be as responsive to the need, you know, as possible, and certainly why we were excited to work on LGBTQ Connect and to partner with Brian and all these great organizations, but also why we developed Everyday Connect. Mm-hmm. We want to stay responsive.
So for folks who aren't familiar with Project Homeless Connect,
yes,
let's talk just briefly about the, these bi-monthly events, right? They happen roughly every other month?
Roughly every other month, about five times a year. They're large-scale service events. And Project Homeless Connect started in 2004 as an initiative of Mayor Gavin Newsom's office and has grown. So the first Project Homeless Connect was held in San Francisco, but it's been duplicated in over 200 cities around the world.
I remember when it first started off, it was kind of a big deal. And I mean, that's the whole, you know, that's it's like a full-time job to be homeless. You got to go from place to place all the time, and transportation's a hassle, and you're going all across town. And so the idea was like a one-stop shop to have all these services. People can go there and sign up for things.
Right. One-stop shop. All the vital nonprofits as well as city agencies are in one location. Everyone comes together. It's a huge team effort. We utilize about 700 volunteers to pull off one of these events. We serve about 1,700 people at our large scale events. And you, someone could really get done in one day what could take them months to accomplish by running around the city trying to get to all these different service agencies. So it's a model that, you know, we feel really strongly helps. We hear from our participants that they enjoy the day. We love that it's being replicated and now being used to target specific populations. You know, Veterans Connects have been done in the past. Family Connect is done once a year. Now we're doing LGBT. So we're really excited.
And Brian, this was kind of your idea to do this particular one, right?
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, I had been in conversations with some national LGBT leaders like Kate Kendall from the National Center for Lesbian Rights and Ray Carey from the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and MV Lee Badgett from the Williams Institute in UCLA, who just happened to be my three lesbian heroes. I'm just like, I'm so shy around them because I'm such awe of them, and they're beautiful people.
They're amazing.
And I was doing my thing saying, look, now that marriage, we've invested everything we have. We've thrown the kitchen sink at marriage. We finally got to a place of accomplishment on it. And there's a conversation about what's next.
Mm-hmm.
In the
and now we want basic like housing? How dare us?
We do not have an LGBT-focused housing infrastructure whatsoever. We do not have a safety net system built in place, and other communities have been investing for decades in building out a safety net and connecting their community to resources. We haven't had that luxury because we've had to buy our basic rights. And so now it's time to come back and invest in the safety net for those of us for whom marriage is not something that is part of, on our radar screen. When you don't have a place to live, when you're worried about how you're going to eat, the last thing on your mind is that. And so the significant portion of the LGBT community that's low income and for whom marriage is not a priority, you know, we've sort of sat back and it's our turn now. So we were having a conversation about including housing as part of a national strategy, whether it's part of the NGLTF or setting up a separate organization. And as part of that, I said, well, let's take this model of Project Homeless Connect, even though we're not calling it homeless because it's for everybody who housed and unhoused at LGBTQ Connect. And let's kickstart it. Let's start this national conversation about the housing status of LGBT people and really use this to replicate in LGBT centers across the country and start having this infrastructure getting built so that the poor LGBT folks aren't suffering so much.
Do you expect that the situation, the percentages are sort of similar in other cities, or do you have any sense of that?
I co-founded the first LGBT youth group in the world back in 1983 in Dallas, Texas, when I got kicked out of my house. And I was part of that whole group of homeless LGBT youth who are throwaways. And I don't think it's changed. We are kicked out of our homes. We don't have access to flights to affordability like other places. You know, people would rather be homeless in the park in San Francisco than to go back to the traumatic environments that we came from. So I don't think that we have access to the resources. We don't have access to the familial support systems. We have increased levels of discrimination. We have all of these things that drive the homelessness. So I think it's everywhere.
So like in the minute and a half that we have left, Monday, 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock, 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon at the LGBT Center in San Francisco, 1800 Market Street, is LGBTQ Connect. And just a quick reminder of what people can expect to find there.
They can expect to find a welcoming environment. They can expect to find a variety of services that they need, everything from housing, medical, legal, immigration. We're really excited to be able to offer all of those. A lunch, hopefully a good time,
and lunch, yay.
Yay, lunch, and hopefully connections, lasting connections to service providers and organizations that people can continue to work with.
And there's a plan for a follow up after this, that was sort of some follow up to the participants to sort of get a survey and a sense of what people need, so that the city can make some changes. Maybe
I've been calling on the city to come up with a measurable and accountable plan to reduce LGBT homelessness by 50% in 5 years, and so we're going to survey the participants at the LGBTQ Connect and find out what were the mechanisms that caused them to become homeless, and then get the city leaders and the department heads, the people who are in charge of these billion-dollar budgets, on the record about what are they going to do for us to reduce LGBT homelessness by 50% in 5 years.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I want to thank my guests. Thank you so much for being here. Emily Cohen of Project Homeless Connect and Brian Basinger of AIDS Housing Alliance San Francisco. Learn more about Project Homeless Connect and LGBTQ Connect this Monday, October 7th at projecthomelessconnect.com. Learn more about housing issues in general and housing help specifically for folks with HIV/AIDS at AIDS Housing Alliance's website, ahasf.org. That's ahasf.org. If you missed part of this broadcast, you can hear the whole thing on our website, outonthebay.org, by about 9 o'clock tonight. You can also hear favorite past shows. And I want to let you know that Out in the Bay is supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS or by phone at 415-989-1616. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions. So write to us, Eric at outinthebay.com and Marilyn at outinthebay.com. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KLW, our host station, for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Joanne Marr. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.